Green Mountain Chronicles, number 32, Senator Ralph Flanders.
This is one of the many ways in which the military arm of our government is taking over the affairs of our everyday life and bending them to the purposes of national defense. That is to say, our government is becoming one in which the requirements of the military arm have the first say in all matters related.
He was certainly Vermont. He was just as dry and unassuming in his looks as anybody in politics. His manner of speaking was very diffident and hesitating, and he just didn't look like the forceful person that he actually was.
1946, an inventor industrialist Ralph Flanders becomes Vermont's junior United States Senator. Born in Barnet in 1880, Flanders became an engineer at the Jones and Lamson Machine Tool Company in Springfield in 1912. Several successful inventions and his business acumen helped triple J&L's size and gain Flanders the presidency of the company. In 1940, Flanders, who was a deeply religious man, turned to politics, losing the Republican senatorial primary to George Aiken. But in 1946, Flanders fares better and joins Aiken in Washington.
He said he was a liberal conservative.
Flanders' daughter, Elizabeth Flanders Ballard.
Conservative in fiscal things and a liberal in human social things. I remember that he was voting against NATO because he didn't think we could afford it. But certainly the McCarthy business was social.
The McCarthy business was Flanders' greatest claim to political fame. A series of speeches in the U.S. Senate in 1954 denouncing witch-hunting Wisconsin Senator Joseph McCarthy, then embarked upon an investigation of communists in the Army.
Whenever he came home, the reporters were supposed to go and interview him.
Kendall Wild, now managing editor of the Rutland Herald, was a young reporter in 1954 and the first to learn that Flanders was to speak out against McCarthy in the Senate on March 9th.
Almost accidentally, I asked him what his opinion was of the way McCarthy was carrying on. And he said, well, I'm going to say something about that. So he told me about his view of McCarthy as being a danger and not doing good for the country. I always thought he meant that McCarthy was a danger to the system of government. He considered McCarthy and his tactics the sort of harassment that the Nazis had the reputation of doing before the war in Germany to disrupt the opposition.
For the next several months, Wilde sequestered himself in Springfield's Harkness House, watching the Army McCarthy hearings on TV. On June 11th, he saw Flanders approach McCarthy.
He certainly didn't dominate the scene. He just sort of had a piece of paper in his hand and stepped into the light and handed it to McCarthy. That was the notice that they were going to say something on the floor of the Senate. McCarthy was prone to complain that people said things and had breached senatorial courtesy by not letting him know ahead of time. So this was a formal notice that something was going to be said.
That afternoon, Flanders again spoke in the Senate, this time introducing a resolution calling for McCarthy's removal from his committee chairmanships. A month later, following strong senatorial opposition, Flanders changed the resolution to one calling for McCarthy's censure. On December 2nd, after months of debate, the Senate voted 67-22 to condemn McCarthy. A quiet senator from a tiny state had brought about the downfall of the most feared man in contemporary American history.
He was not terribly prominent in the actual hearings that took place when they were deciding whether to censure him or not. Flanders' role, as far as I know, was just being the initiator and the gadfly of the sentiment against Joe McCarthy.